Good evening. It's good to see everyone out this evening. Before we get started with the sermon, I would like to make a couple of comments. I've been thinking a lot here lately with Emerson and his family coming to worship with us. I've been thinking about all the things that we've gone through in the last year or so. And I was one of the men who originally said, we need to find a preacher as soon as possible because we'll not grow without a preacher. And as I look around, I was wrong. Because, you know, we haven't grown in number, but everybody has stepped up. From the little children's classes through the adult classes, everyone in this congregation has stepped up. The men have done a marvelous job, in my opinion, of putting lessons together. And a lot of the men have actually gotten out of their comfort zone and done things that they probably wouldn't have done if this wouldn't have happened in the last year. So although we've faced a lot of challenge, I do believe we've also grown because of it, and that's a good thing. The numbers haven't shown it, but the numbers aren't really that important. It's whether we've grown spiritually, and I think for the most part we all have. So I just wanted to say that, get that off my chest, because I think it's important that everybody understands that we all have grown through this. I think we've all become closer, and I think it's a great thing. That wasn't the sermon, by the way. That was just a get off your chest kind of thing. Has anyone had a conversation with someone at work or anywhere about someone's has come up to me before and said, I don't understand how bad people prosper. I don't understand how that's allowed to happen. You know what? It does happen. Sometimes people do wrong things and they prosper because of it. But in the end, they're not going to prosper, are they? So that got me to thinking. Debbie and I were talking the other day about the difference between the Old Testament and the New Testament. And we got to looking at certain things as far as how we're prospered. And I wanted to look at the contrast between Old Testament prosperity and New Testament prosperity tonight for just a few moments. And I believe as we go through this, you'll see that in a lot of cases, in the Old Testament, those men who were faithful were prospered physically because of it. That's not to demean it, because it's just the way it was done. I thought Scott was stealing my sermon this morning during the giving. He touched on a lot of things that I'm going to touch on tonight. And I thought maybe he stole my sermon from me, but he didn't. But you know, that's the way it is. And then when we look in the New Testament, it seems that we're prospered through our spiritual being. So there's a difference. And again, I don't want anyone to go away tonight thinking that I'm saying that no one should have nice things, because that's not what this is about at all. And you'll see that as we go through the lesson. I want to start out in Daniel 3. Daniel 3. I want to talk a little bit about Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego. And we're not going to read all this because it's 30-some verses and we don't have the time. So I think most of us know the story. I'm going to go just grab a few verses out of Daniel 3 and just kind of give the highlights of this. In verse 2 it says, "Then Nebuchadnezzar the king sent word to assemble the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up." If you move down to verse 5, it says that at the moment you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the lyre, the trigon, the bagpipe, and all kinds of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up. Verse 6, "But whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire." If you go up to verse 8, it says, "For this reason at that time certain Chaldeans came forward and brought charges against the Jews." And then at verse 12 it says, "There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the administration of the province of Babylon, namely Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have disregarded you. They did not serve your gods or worship the golden image which you have set up." If you go up to verse 16, it says, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to give you an answer concerning this matter." Verse 17, "If it be so, our God, whom to serve, is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king." And verse 18 is a very important verse. Verse 18 says, "But even if he does not, let it be known to you, O king, that we are not going to serve your God or worship the golden image that you have set up. And verse 19 says, "Then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with wrath, and his facial expressions were altered toward Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He answered by giving orders to heat the furnace 7 times more than it was usually heated." In verse 21, "Then these men were tied up in their trousers, their coats, their caps, and their other clothes, and were cast into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire." Go over to verse 24. Then Nebuchadnezzar, the king, was astounded and stood up in haste. He responded and said to his high officials, "Was it not 3 men we cast bound into the midst of the fire?" They answered and said to the king, "Certainly, O king." He answered and said, "Look, I see 4 men loosed and walking about in the midst of the fire without harm, and the appearance of the fourth is like a son of the gods." And verse 27, "And the satraps, the prefects, the governors, and the king's high officials gathered around and saw in regard 3 men that the fire had no effect on. The bodies of these men, nor was the hair of their head singed, nor were their trousers damaged, nor had the smell of fire even come upon them." In verse 28, Nebuchadnezzar responded and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants who put their trust in him, violating the king's command and yielded up their bodies as to not serve or worship any god except their own God." Here is a classic example. And if you read on a little bit further, let's go ahead and start at verse 29. But it says, "Therefore I make a decree that my people, nation, or tongue that speak anything offensive against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb and into their houses reduced to a rubbish heap, inasmuch as there is no other God who is able to deliver in this way." Then the king called Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to prosper in the province of Babylon. Here were 3 men who trusted God so much that they were willing to be cast into the fire. And as we read back, I believe it was verse 18, it didn't matter to them whether they could be delivered from that fire or not. They were willing to die for what they believed in. And because of that, if you look up in verse 30, they were prospered in the province of Babylon. So these 3 men who really cared about God so much and loved Him so much that they were willing to give their lives, they were prospered because of it. And there again, that's not to demean that fact, because that's just the way it was done. If we would, let's turn over to Genesis chapter 13. Genesis chapter 13. Start in verse 1. This is obviously about Abraham. "So Abraham went up from Egypt to the Negev, and he and his wife and all that belonged to him, and Lot with him. Now Abram was very rich in livestock and silver and gold, and he went on his journeys from the Negev as far as Bethel, to the place where his tent had been set at the beginning between Bethel and Ai, to the place of the altar which he had made there formerly. And there Abraham called on the name of the Lord. Now Lot, who went with Abraham, also had flocks and herds and tents, and the land could not sustain them while dwelling together, for their possessions were so great that they were not able to remain together." Here is a man that we study all the time in Abraham, and we can look at all that he had. He was a devout man of Christ. He was prospered because of that. And if we would, let's go way back to the book of Job, which we all know the story of Job. So we're not going to read about that either. I think we just had a lesson a couple weeks ago about Job, actually. But let's look at Job chapter 1, just the first 3 verses. "There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and the man was blameless, upright, fearing God, and turning away from evil. And 7 sons and 3 daughters were born to him. His possessions also were 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yokes of oxen, 500 female donkeys, and very many servants. And that man was the greatest of all the men of the East." So just those 3 verses tells about all the possessions that Job had. As we go through the book of Job, we understand what happened to him. You know, he was, Satan was allowed to test Job beyond things that we cannot as human beings understand, I don't think. Job lost his health. He lost his family. He lost all of his possessions. He was told by his wife to curse God. His friends didn't help him. Anything that could go wrong for Job went wrong. So let's turn all the way back to chapter 42. Chapter 42. Chapter 42 and verse 10 simply says, "And the Lord restored the fortunes of Job when he prayed for his friends, and the Lord increased all that Job had twofold." So if we remember the first three verses we just talked about, all that he had, it was increased twofold because he had done nothing against Christ. Even though his friends, his wife told him to do all these things, to walk away from Christ, he was such a devout, faithful man that he would not do that. So therefore, all of his possessions were given back to him. Let's turn back to 1 Kings. 1 Kings. Chapter 3. And obviously this is about probably the richest man that we've talked about in the Bible, Solomon. Starting in verse 9, it says, "So give the servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, to discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of thine?" And it was pleasing in the sight of the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. And God said to him, "Because you have asked this thing, and have not asked for yourself long life, nor have asked riches for yourself, nor have you asked for the life of your enemies, but you have asked for yourself discernment to understand justice. Behold, I have done according to your words. Behold, I have given you a wise and discerning heart. So there has been no one like you before you, nor shall one like you arise after you. And I have also given you what you have not asked, both riches and honor, so that there will not be any among the kings like you all your days. And if you walk in my ways, keeping my statutes and commandments, as your father David walked, then I will prolong your days." Here is Solomon, who ended up being one of the richest men that we could ever think of. He was given everything. Anything that we could possibly think of, Solomon was given because of the way that he looked upon Christ and the things that he did. And you know, at the end of his life, even Solomon realized that all these possessions that he had were worth nothing. They really weren't worth anything with what he had. Those are four very quick examples of men in the Old Testament who were very faithful Christians, very faithful men who were given prosperity because of their faithfulness. And there, again, there's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with that. It would seem that in the Old Testament that God blessed men he considered righteous with earthly gain. It would seem that that's the case, especially in these four examples. So let's go over to the New Testament for a few moments. And let's look at how things were in the New Testament. If you would, turn over to Matthew chapter 5. We're going to look first at some verses that we're all very familiar with, the Beatitudes. And this is, I wanted to read these because I feel like this is something that we all need to read upon occasion to understand what we should be searching for as Christians. Starting in chapter 5 and verse 1. And it says, "And when he saw the multitudes, he went up on the mountain, and after he sat down, his disciples came to him. And opened his mouth, he began to teach them, saying, Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the gentle, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the poor in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Blessed are those who have been persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when men cast insults at you and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely on account of me. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward in heaven is great. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you." This tells us exactly here in verse 11 and verse 12 what's going to happen to us if we're faithful Christians. Blessed are you when men cast insults at you and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely on account of me. But here's the kicker. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward in heaven is great. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. I apologize. This light is right in the middle of my Bible, and it's really causing me to not see very well, so I apologize. Anyway, but that's what makes this so perfect, isn't it? It really doesn't matter the possessions that we have now in the New Testament. That's not going to be talked about in the next few minutes on the examples that I'm giving. What matters is that we follow Christ. We do the same thing that Solomon did. We follow his statutes. We keep doing what we're supposed to be doing, and we're going to be given that reward in heaven, which is far greater than any earthly gain that we could possibly get. If you would, let's turn over to Matthew 4. Let's turn back to Matthew 4. I'm going to start at verse 18. Matthew 4 and verse 18 says, "And walking by the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, who was called Peter, and Andrew his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And he said to them, 'Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men.' And they immediately left their nets and followed him. And going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James the son of Zebedee, and John his brother, in the boat with Zebedee their father, mending their nets, and he called them. And they immediately left the boat and their father and followed them." You know, we've had sermons on these few verses over and over again because of what it's saying here. You know, today when we're to pick up the cross and follow Christ, it's totally different for us than what these verses are talking about. These men actually dropped what they were doing and followed Christ. Verse 20, "And they immediately left the nets and followed him." So the nets were what? The nets were their livelihood, right? They fished. That's how they made their money. And they dropped what they were doing. Now let's think about that for a few moments. This statement isn't to judge, it's just a question, because I'm not sure how I would answer it. What if we were asked to do the same thing today? If we said, walk away from how you make your living, don't worry about your children, don't worry about your grandchildren, don't worry about your family, walk away and follow me. How many of us would be able to do that today? I think it would be extremely, extremely scary to do that. Even though Christ has told us over and over and over again that he's going to give us our basic needs for this life, right? That's what he tells us. And I've told this story before, and I'll tell it again tonight while I'm up there. Back in 2008, I lost my job. I'm 60, almost 65 years old, and I've been working since I was 13. And in 2008, I lost my job very suddenly and very quickly. And you talk about scary. You talk about scary. When you've had a job since you were 13 years old, and you made your own way, and you didn't lean on anybody else for money, and all of a sudden, you lose your job completely, that's scary. So I went home and I told my wife I just lost my job and wasn't sure what we were going to do. And you know what my wife did? She got her Bible out and we started reading the scriptures. And it says that he's going to take care of my basic needs. He's going to give me food, shelter, and raiment. That's what the scriptures tell me. So I've been preaching that for 30 years. So it was time for me to live it. So I quit worrying about it. I thought, he's going to take care of me. That's some way, somehow, he's going to take care of us. And he did. He did exactly that. I was without a job for 2 months, and then I found a job, and now I've even got a better job. So he definitely took care of me. So it's something that we all need to think about. But you know, that is scary for that to happen to anybody. And I hate to see anybody go through that. But these men did it. They dropped what they were doing at that moment. And just think of the faith that they had to have. Think of that for a minute. It's amazing that they were able to do that. If you would, turn over to Matthew 10. That's not what I wanted. That's not what I wanted. Sorry, I got the wrong scripture here. Let's turn over to Matthew 19. Matthew 19. Matthew 19, starting in verse 16. 16 through 24. And behold, one came to him and said, "Teacher, what good thing shall I do that I may obtain eternal life?" And he said to him, "Why are you asking me about what is good? There is only one who is good. But if you wish to enter into life, keep the commandments." And he said, "Which ones?" And Jesus said, "You shall not commit murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, honor your father and mother, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself." The young man said to him, "All these things I have kept. What am I still lacking?" Jesus said, "If you wish to be complete, go and sell your possessions and give to the poor, and you shall have treasure in heaven, and come follow me." But when the young man heard this statement, he went away grieved, for he was one who owned much property. And Jesus said to his disciples, "Truly I say to you, it is hard for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. And again I say to you, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God." And when the disciples heard this, they were very astonished and said, "Then who can be saved?" And looking upon them, Jesus said, "With men this is possible, but with men this is impossible. With God all things are possible." So this is kind of, I think this is what Scott was touching on today during the giving. There's nothing wrong with having riches. There's nothing wrong with having the things that this life can give you. There's not a thing in the world wrong with that. But you have to be willing to give some of it back. And here's a classic example of what didn't happen. This young ruler, he had it all. He was obviously a very rich person. And he said, I've done these things. I've done what you've asked me to do. What am I still lacking?" And when he was told he had to sell his possessions, that's where it all went wrong for him. He wasn't willing to do that. I had a preacher tell me one time that when you're giving, it's not just about getting in your wallet and giving what's left, and I think we all understand that and know that. It's more of planning. But this preacher went a step further and he said it's also a sacrifice. It's a sacrifice that when you give, you should give up something to give back to the Lord. And I never really, up until that point in time, I'd never really looked at it that way. But I think that's a fair statement. It's easy to give our excess, isn't it? I mean, it's easy if we've got a few extra dollars in our wallet or a little bit extra money in our bank account, it's easy to write that check out because we're not going to miss it. But if we have to give back more than that, and we should, and that's a sacrifice, that's what it should be all about. And that's exactly what is being talked about here with this rich young ruler. He had it all, and he told him, "Sell it and come follow me, and you'll have riches in heaven." But he was more concerned about the riches on earth than he was in heaven. And you'll see through this example that the difference between some of the men in the Old Testament and the New Testament is we're not talking about riches in heaven here, or riches on earth here. We're talking about riches in heaven. If you would, turn over to the book of Luke. Luke chapter 12. Luke chapter 12. Starting in verse 16. "And he told them a parable, saying, the land of a certain rich man was very productive. And he began reasoning to himself, saying, what shall I do, since I have no place to store my crops? And he said, this is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and I'll build bigger ones. And there I will store all my goods and my grain. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your soul is required of you. And now who will own what you have prepared? So is the man who lays up treasures for himself and is not rich toward God." This is the classic example of what we're talking about tonight. Here's a man who was so pleased with himself because he looked out and he had everything. He had so much grain that he couldn't even store it all. Nice problem to have, huh? He had so much he couldn't even store it. So his answer was, I'll just build bigger barns and I'll put it all in there. I'll take it easy. The rest of my life I'll eat, I'll drink, I'll be merry. I won't have any problems except for one thing. Christ called him a fool. He said, you fool, this very night your soul would be required of you. So that night his life was taken from him. And obviously he wasn't prepared. He was more worried about the things of this life than he was the things after death. He was more concerned about what he could get on this earth. And again, I don't want anyone to walk away tonight thinking that I'm saying that we shouldn't have nice things. That's not what this is about. There's nothing wrong with having nice things. But the point is, you have to serve God while you have it, and you have to thank God that you get it. You know, I've been doing some preaching here lately about how bad our society has become because of all the murders and everything that's going on around us and how scary it is. And I agree with that. But I came to the conclusion the other day, you know what, I'm not in control of that. God's in control. I need to trust Him. I need to trust Him. He knows what He's doing. I don't. I need to trust Him. I need to quit worrying about those things. I can't control. I can't do anything about something that I can't control. So I need to put my focus on things that I can control. And that's to help people and to get more people to heaven. That should be my main focus. Not worry about these other things. Not worry about the treasures that I can pull up for myself. Let's look at a few verses before we close tonight. Very simple verses. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 7 says, "For we have brought nothing into the world, so we cannot take anything out of it either." We came in a babe with nothing. Absolutely nothing. And we're going to leave the same way. There have been many men behind a pulpit that said they've never seen a hearse pulling a U-Haul with everybody's possession in it. You're going to leave with absolutely nothing. You're going to leave this earth with what you came into it. Absolutely nothing. My sister worked 44 years as a school teacher. Never got married. Loved her job. Loved teaching school. Retired. And 8 months later, she was dead of cancer. And she had a fantastic pension. She had it all. She had a great pension. She could have traveled. She could have went anywhere she wanted to. But she didn't think about Christ. I can't tell you the number of conversations I had with her over the years, especially on her deathbed. Still could not convince her that she needed to become a child of God. Never did convince her of that. She was more worried about everything else. She loved her job. She had a great pension. And all she talked about was, now I can do whatever I want to do. But Christ kind of answered her like he did the man with the barns, didn't he? He said, you know, your soul's going to be required of you. You have to be prepared. You have to be ready. And it's not worrying about the riches. Matthew 6 and verse 19 says, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures upon earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal." Very good verse here about why we should not worry about the riches that we can gain on this earth. They're not going to go with us when we die. They're not going to go to heaven with us if that's where we end up. They're going to rust and they're going to be destroyed. We're not going to be able to take anything with us. And James chapter 3 chapter 5 and verse 3, "Your gold and your silver have rusted, and their rust will be a witness against you, and will consume your flesh like fire. It is the last days that you have stored up for your treasure." You know, some people become so incensed with treasure, that's all they worry about. All they worry about is how much money they have in the bank account. All they worry about is that they've got to have the biggest house on the block. They've got to have the nicest car. And I've talked to people who literally get sick, physically sick. I talked to a guy not too long ago who works in the building where I work. He literally got sick because he had got a really nice car and his neighbor got one better than he did. And he was sick over it. Physically sick that his neighbor got a nicer looking car than he did. Now, how stupid is that? Can you get any more stupid than that? Even if we're not talking about Christ here, can you get any more stupid than that? Who cares about that kind of stuff? But this young man was literally sick to his stomach over it. Because he thought he'd one-upped his neighbor. And it was a buddy of his. He thought he'd one-upped him, and he lost. And he was literally sick over it. I thought, how silly. You just can't get any sillier than that. And I hope that we've proved tonight that in the Old Testament, men of God were prospered for their belief and their faith. And while there was nothing wrong about that, if we look at the examples in the Old Testament, there was nothing said about, if you follow me, I'm going to give you riches. Christ didn't say, lay down your nets and follow me and you're going to be well taken care of. He never said that. In any of those verses that we read tonight, he never said that one time. So those men had the faith that no matter what happened, they were going to be taken care of. Now, they may not have had the nicest house, they may not have had the nicest car, but they didn't go hungry. That's the important thing. We need to be sure, especially as we get older and older, we need to understand that these things, these riches, really don't matter. What matters is that we're prepared. That we're a child of God, and we're keeping His commandments. You know, it's one thing to say you're a Christian. I think Kevin touched on it the other night in Bible class. It may be this morning. It's one thing to come to church three times a week and get your name checked off. Yeah, I was here Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night. I'm a good Christian. I'm here every time the door opens up. I walk in the door. But do you do anything after that? Do you do anything after that? When you go home at night, where do you put your Bible? I know of Christians who throw their Bible in the back seat of their car, and that's where it's at Wednesday night when they go to Bible study. Never opened up the Bible again from Sunday evening through till Wednesday night. Never even opened it. Wasn't even sure where it was at times. I've talked to Christians like that. That's exactly what Kevin was talking about this morning. That's not the way that we're supposed to be. How are we to study and show ourselves approved if we throw our Bible in the back of our car and we're not even sure where it's at? Or we throw it on the coffee table and that's where it lays for 4 or 5 days and we never open it. Especially, and I don't want to call out anybody, but especially if you have young children, it's important that you open that Bible and you teach them. You know, I was a Bible teacher. I taught different classes for years at Cortland Avenue up in Kokomo. And I remember one young lady came to me and she said she didn't think that I was teaching her young daughter enough. And I said, well, how much time do you spend teaching your young daughter? Well, we're awful busy. You know, my husband works second shift. And I said, so in 40 minutes, I'm supposed to teach your daughter everything she's supposed to know about the Bible. Is that what you're telling me tonight? I said, that's not my job. My job is not to teach your daughter everything about the Bible. I'm willing to help any way I can, but I can't do that in 40 minutes on a Wednesday night or a Sunday morning. I can't do that. That's your job, not my job. And I believe it's more important than ever in our world that we live in today to bring up godly children. It's more important than ever. Well, I don't want to ramble on because I could. But anyway, I really appreciate everybody listening tonight. I hope you understand that there is a difference between men of the Old Testament and men of the New Testament. But our sole purpose should be worrying about whether we're children of God and not worrying about the things that we have in this life. And if you're not a Christian, I think you understand that. I think you understand that we teach the Word of God here. We teach the truth. I think you have to know by now what you need to do. I was married when Debbie and I got married. She married a non-Christian. She married me. I was a non-Christian, and we were married for 4 years before I became a Christian. And I used every excuse in the book not to become a Christian. So don't sit there and tell me that you got a better excuse than I did, because I had them all. I used every one of them. And I thought they were fantastic. I thought, you know, we were talking the other night in Bible study about justifying your sins. Well, I was justifying why I wasn't becoming a Christian. Brother so-and-so, he's a hypocrite. I've seen him out doing things. Why would I, you know? Yeah, there's hypocrites in the church. There certainly there are. But again, I had an old-time preacher one time tell me, do you want to spend eternity in hell with those hypocrites? Because that's exactly what's going to happen if you use that excuse. And he was absolutely 100% correct. Don't use excuses. You know what you need to do tonight to become a Christian. Everything's ready. We would love for you to step forward and say that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. If there's anything that we can do to help you in that regards, please come forward as we stand and sing.